Welcome to Across the Desk and our new series, The Future Looks Good. We're focusing on autism and employment and connecting you to resources that can help your future look good.
You are the future. The future looks good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Across the Desk. I'm laughing because I just screwed up and chose the wrong microphone, and we've had to start again. We're continuing with our podcast series called The Future Looks Good. And The Future Looks Good focuses on the autism community and mostly on employment. But occasionally, like today, we're bringing up some other topics, and we're looking forward to some really cool guests in the new year. And I do this podcast with my lovely business partner, Paulette.
Good morning, everyone.
Are you? And she's sticking out her tongue. So rude, dude. And so before she was waving. Yeah. And so then we were discussing how, you know, you do the royal wave, which is like this little weird circle of your hand, but it's actually functional, which, you know, I speculate just makes the queen lazy, but seeing how she's one of the longest reigning monarchs in history, I think she deserves a break now and again. So today, actually, I'm going to back up. If this is your first time joining us, one of the reasons that we launched this podcast is because Paulette and I are building a company called Spiro Careers Canada. And that is a company, this happened last time too. I don't think it's the microphone. I think it's just me. So Spiro Careers Canada, we're building a platform called NanoWorks, and it is being developed specifically for people on the spectrum to access autism specific coaches and trainings and all kinds of good stuff. And it's being built with the autism community. So we are not building in a vacuum. We're not saying this is what you got to have. We are working with autism specific coaches, and then we are inviting members of the autism community to beta test the platform and give us their feedback. So you might hear about that soon. You might not. We'll see how it goes. We also happen to run a not-for-profit called Socially ASD. 50% of our board are folks on the spectrum, so we have kind of a built-in a built-in group for that, which is awesome. And Paulette and I are doing this because, for me, I have a 22-year-old son who was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which I know is a controversial term. I kind of like Asperger's. Anyway, it's my thing. Was diagnosed when he was 7. He also happens to have dyslexia, ADD, executive function deficit, which is important for today's topic, and a few other things. He is an incredibly creative, empathetic, funny, if I may say so myself, handsome, just a wonderful guy. I'm an extremely lucky mom. And while he drives me completely around the freaking bend some days, wouldn't change a thing. He just is the sweetest. I could tell stories. It gets me teary, but he's just the sweetest guy ever. And Paulette, why do you do this? Why do you put up with my crazy?
I put up with your crazy because I do like your son. No.
All no. About Thomas. It should be.
But I also have a son who is Asperger's. He's a little bit older. He's 35 now.
Ooh.
Yeah. I almost said 34. But he has been through the gamut of employment, being hired, being fired, being doing all kinds of things. And he's now working in Chicago. He's working full time. He's married. And he seems to have settled his life in Chicago. It was not easy in the early years, mm-hmm. but he is now doing what he needs to do for his life. But I did not get into this field because of my son. I was in this field before he was born.
You do realize that that created some kind of God complex yeah. situation where he was like, guess what I'm sending you?
Yeah, it was an interesting little tidbit of fun. Yeah,
a little bit of universal karma. Because yeah. I, at the time, was, you know, not a religious show by any stretch. I'm not a religious person, but I do have a commune with the powers that be in the universe. And at the time was asking for patience. Mm-hmm. Damn. Jinx that sucker right there. So today we've been doing some research around executive function deficits. And my son, again, diagnosed at 9 with an executive function deficit, which made, you know, would have been nice to have that a couple of years earlier, because god dang, that made some things frustrating. But the interesting thing is, even throughout all of the meetings with teachers and all of the meetings with high school and whatever else, it didn't really come up all that much. They mainly focused on his autism. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, his executive function deficit caused way more issue than his autism ever did. So I wish I'd known then what I know now. But this will help as we get ready to send him to college for the second time. So this is one of the reasons we're looking at it. And so for today, we are going to be focusing on defining executive function, what the five core skills are of executive function. I keep having on here ED, which actually stands for erectile dysfunction. Not the same thing. Freudian slip. When do executive function skills usually start to get developed, and how this can be hard for the autism community? And then we'll see where we get to, because we are really tempted to split this into two, potentially three, because the more research we do around this, the more we discover how anxiety has such a negative impact on our ability to use our executive function skills well. And with, I think, what's the statistic, Paulette? Like over 80% of the autism community usually has some form of anxiety?
It's 70 to 80% usually have some sort of diagnosed anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a very high statistic when it's usually 5 to 10% of the neurotypical
general population
diagnosed with an anxiety disorder.
Yeah. And I think we underestimate. I remember, this is the weird thing. So this is a weird overshare maybe, but my dad passed away when I was 20. And I remember I was in college my first year. And I remember calling my mom, because I was having a really hard time focusing, you know, really hard time. And this is the first time, obviously, I'd lost somebody that important to me. And I mean, I'd lost grandparents, but that's another story. And I called her and I'm like, you know, mom, I'm having a bit of a struggle focusing and, like, you know, getting work done and whatever. And she's like quiet on the other end. And I mean, and my mom passed away last year. She was a little bit salty. She didn't hold back too much. And she's like, well, what do you expect? What are you thinking? Like, your dad just died. That's going to, you know, that's going to leave a mark. It actually made me feel better, because I had not considered the impact on executive function and the ability to stay organized from that extremely stressful event.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think having some light shed on that allows you to find ways that work better for you and allows you to see, you know, what the triggers are and what could be going on. It's not that you're crazy. It's not your autism. It's that there's a lot going on right now and everybody's struggling.
Yeah.
So we're going to hop in. We did some of the resources that we are invoking. Harvard has a Center on the Developing Child, and trying to find really good adult executive functioning resources, we found a bit difficult.
Yes, there's a lot for kids, but not for adults. Yeah.
Right. And so fortunately, the Harvard Center for Children Development also came up with some adult stuff. There is the National Center for Learning Disabilities Executive Function 101 document, which, while it focuses on kids, has some good stuff for adults. We have another report that we'll be referring to in a different podcast from the ECRA group, addressing executive function at the secondary level. So if you happen to be in high school or university, this would apply to you. And then Lara Honos Webb wrote a book called Life-Changing Strategies to Improve. I did ED again. I seem to
executive functioning
brain hacks.
Yeah.
Paulette has fallen in love with this book, so we'll be using that as well. So
let's start with the definition of executive functioning then.
Give her.
Executive functioning describes a cluster of advanced cognitive skills, including working memory, organization, and emotional control, that acts as your command center as you navigate all the complex tasks of daily life. Simply put, it comprises the thinking skills that allow you to boss your life, to be the boss of your life. Executive functioning determines your ability to stay focused, plan ahead, organize, resist temptations, and stop something once you've started it. It also helps you with emotional regulation and your ability to make transitions and solve problems with flexibility. Wow.
I think my son comes by his executive function deficit, honestly. Because I have more squirrel moments than most.
We all have squirrel moments, but again, it's can you stop those squirrel moments and get back into focusing and doing what you have to do? Or does that squirrel moment take you off on a tangent and you're gone for an hour?
So valid question. And the answer to that is that honestly depends mm-hmm. on the amount of sleep I've had mm-hmm. and the amount of meditation I practice.
Yeah.
So I practice meditation pretty much every day in some capacity or another. Mm-hmm. If I don't take the time to check in and see where my stress level is and to check in, I just finished reading Brendon Burchard's High Performance yeah. Habits.
Yeah.
And on the floor at the door to my office, my Les Nessman office, I have set intention. No, what do I have? I have released tension, set intention. And I stop at that point before I enter my office space every day. And I either do a Qigong that Paulette has taught me. Did I say it right?
Yes,
you did. Yay! For once. Or I just stop, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just get into new mind space and going into my office and, you know, try and contain my squirrels who are usually on ecstasy. And do whatever.
Again, this is taken from the book Brain Hacks. But it says everyone can benefit from strengthening their executive functioning skills because
100%. At
different points in everybody's life, their executive functioning skills might go off the rail a little bit, and you might need some tools or some strategies to put in place to bring yourself back to where you need to be. It's not something that is written in stone. It's just mm-hmm. something that everybody has a challenge with, right?
And be gentle on the days where, like, you know, again, an overshare. Last night, my dog, very upset tummy. And, you know, did not get a good night's sleep, had to drop a stool sample over at the vet this morning, like everything went cockaloopy. And so I'm not expecting great things. I'm expecting to deliver on what I need to, but I'm not expecting, you know, fantastic things because I'm sleep deprived and a little bit stressed because my puppy's not feeling well.
Oh dear.
I know, right? And she's so cute. So on the Center on the Developing Child from Harvard University, the core life skills that we're going to jump into, and Paulette's done this way more than I have because she's a successful coach for folks on the spectrum. And it says here, we all need a set of core life skills to manage work, family, and relationships successfully. These include planning, focus, self-control, awareness, and flexibility. Mm-hmm. No one is born with these skills, but we can all learn them over time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the future podcasts talks about how anxiety hijacks your brain and gets in the way of onboarding those skills. Mm-hmm. And if they're not taught in the way that, you know, you need to onboard them, then yes, it can be a little more challenging to figure those bits and pieces out. Yeah. It says here, although it's much easier to learn core life skills when you've had a strong foundation early in life, it is also never too late. Mm-hmm. Brains continue to develop into our teen and adult years, which means adults can still learn and strengthen skills. And they've actually proven that your brain has neuroplasticity until the day you die.
That's right.
So anybody who uses that old dog new trick bullshit, you need to drop that right now.
So some of the skills we're talking about today will transform you from being distracted by your brain to being the director of your brain. And a lot of people think that they cannot change these different brain thought patterns, habits, yeah. but they can be. So these are things that are easily changed, right?
So a couple of things that come up. So under impulse control, for an example, right? So another resource that we go to is a website and magazine called ADT. It's ADD, attitude. Because my son, you know, and I are equally ADD. So impulse control is the ability to stop and think before acting. Mm-hmm. Emotional control, the ability to manage feelings by thinking about goals. Not so completely sure about that, but we'll see. Planning and prioritizing, the ability to create steps to reach a goal and to make decisions about what to focus on. Very true. Flexibility, the ability to change strategies or revise plans when conditions change. COVID is a perfect example of that. Working memory. Oh, he also has a working memory deficit. How he's as smart and talented as he is with this brain that just does not want to behave is beyond me. Working memory, the ability to hold information in mind and use it to complete a task. Self-monitoring, the ability to monitor and evaluate your own performance. And one of the things I absolutely love about Paulette and the way she works with her clients is that she reminds them that they have the skill set to be mindful and be in control of what they're doing. And that's one of, from my perspective, that's one of your strongest messages. Am I wrong there? You can tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong. No.
I'm wrong. Now she's just being arbitrary.
But you have to work where the client's at and give the skills to the client from where they're at. You can't start jumping all over the place and giving them something that's way too advanced. You have to start where they're at. And this is what, with executive functioning, you have to figure out where your client is at. I've coached many people in college and university to keep their skills organized, their tasks organized, to be focused on their course. I've taught study habits for people who have the memory issues. And giving them all these tools just helps them focus and get through the courses that they have to get through and be successful at it. Because even though they're extremely intelligent people, they can do it. It's the memory. It's the short-term, long-term memory.
Having a bag of monkeys in your head. It's like that. Yeah. Anyway, I missed two. I'm just going to finish this part up.
Oh, sorry. There's more?
Yeah, my bad. Task initiation.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to recognize when it is time to get started on something and begin without procrastinating. Oh, Paulette.
That's me.
That's not me being critical. She's the one that says that about herself, but yeah, she's a procrastinator. Organization, the ability to create and maintain systems to keep track of information or materials. And that, my friends, is the key to my success that I put in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
My son always says to me, you can't have ADD. You're so organized. I'm like, I'm so organized because I have ADD.
Yeah.
Everything goes in my calendar.
It's using the tools.
Yeah, man.
You develop the skills to use the tools to manage your executive functioning challenges and your ADD. If you don't have the tools and you don't use the tools,
yeah,
you're going to be lost.
Screwed, blued, and tattooed.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to phrase it. Yes.
Yeah. I am not even joking with you. So keep in mind that Paulette and I are of an age group where electronic tools, you know, were not a thing in our teens and 20s, right? I'm 50. Gmail and Google calendars, like we had to, and oh man, like paper things make me crazy. Like, so everything, every appointment, reminders, everything goes into my Gmail calendar I have three different sets of notifications on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a 5-minute warning, a 10-minute warning, and then like an hour and a day before. Oh, I have four of them actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I don't, squirrel, like it won't happen.
Yeah. And it's so easy with today's technology to go into these squirrels and get lost in the internet for about three or four hours.
Right?
Yeah. So having time limits and setting time around what you're doing and how you're doing it is extremely important as well.
Yeah.
These are all things that you have to put into place and you have to follow them. It's creating and developing new structures or new habits in your life.
Yep.
Many of my clients have talked to me about a morning routine and an evening routine, and they've developed this habit so that it keeps them focused on what they're doing. The morning routine is clear. Once that alarm clock rings, you get up. There's no 20 snooze alarms, because then your day is already lost. No snooze alarms.
I do too. But again, I set an alarm at 6 a.m. and then I set an alarm at 7 a.m.
Right. One of my clients, his morning routine at one point was almost 2 hours long.
Oh, God, no, that's too much.
Well, think about it. He worked on it. His morning routine started with getting out of bed and ended it with him finishing breakfast. And that included everything in between. Okay. Now,
that's well done.
So it's again, it's not the ritual of waking up and splashing water on your face.
That's what I thought you meant. It took him 2 hours to get out of bed. I'm like, no. No. If you were my kid, I'd be in there with a paddle going.
His routine consisted of getting up, using the facilities, getting showered, getting dressed, reading his to-do list for the day while he's cooking breakfast, finishing breakfast, cleaning up from breakfast, and then his morning routine is done. But well he had developed that habit, that structure, in order to do that, because otherwise he would get up, turn on the internet, around. And be gone for 4 hours. Yeah. Because
I do that with my, I try very hard. It's very rare that I have my phone in my room. It's becoming more frequent only because I use an app called Headspace for meditation. And I also have Monkey Brain. So periodically at 3 a.m., Monkey Brain kicks in. And they either have a guided meditation on falling back to sleep, or they have, I guess they call them calming stories. Mm-hmm. And I put one of those on and back I go. But I try very hard to have little computer not in my room, tablet not in my room, none of that. My phone is my only concession. Mm-hmm. I will say, and I also have actually just, and we're on track, but off track, but it just occurred to me I have a Samsung S9 just to give, you know, Android versus iOS. And I'm sure iOS or Apple has this as well, but there is a device wind down thing that you can put on your phone. You can with Samsung anyway, it comes as part of it. So at 10 o'clock, my phone goes to gray. And the light on the screen drops down. Like there's all these cues that it's time to wrap shit up and go to bed.
Yep.
I will sometimes, depends. The other reason I don't keep my phone in my room is that if I don't want to wake my husband up, you know, doing that. But, you know, if he happens to be snoring or whatever and he ends up on the sofa, okay, then I can do that. Mm-hmm. Raging monkey brain. Mm-hmm. I will go on Instagram or something. Mm-hmm. It I don't know why, it snaps me out of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I also put a timer on. I have a timer app called Ovo.
Yep.
And I'll put like a 5 minute window on that because otherwise I'm like squirrel town.
And these are all the things that the strategies that you have to put in place, but you have to not only put them in place, but you have to get them to be part of the habits that you're using, the techniques you're using every day. So my client who was doing the 2 hour morning routine, would that be successful for an individual who gets up at 8 o'clock and has to be at school by 10?
No.
So he has again, learned to adapt. Neurotypical people. Most people, if you have to be at an early business meeting, you can move your morning routine down to a very short period of time and get out the door and get to that meeting.
I just wake up earlier.
Some people wake up earlier. Some people condense their morning routine. Mm-mm. Oh, yes. Condense your morning routine. You do it faster. Yes, I do.
Only if my alarm hasn't gone off or I've played Happy Snooze Party.
But you have to figure out how to adapt it and be flexible with it. And that's part of executive functioning, too, to be flexible with the strategies and tools that you've put in place. So if you need the flexibility to change some of the routines because of something happening during your day, you have to be able to change it. You have to get up earlier, for my client anyways, that would be the snooze alarm party. He wouldn't be able to get up earlier.
I have to get up earlier because that routine helps me stay. So if I'm rushed, if I try and condense my routine, then my brain goes into full monkey mode. And I'm not in the right frame of mind before I go either, right? So I belong to a lot of, and Paulette as well. We do a lot of webinars. We do a lot of groups, or when we were doing face-to-face meetings, I don't want to walk into that wound up because I had to condense my routine. So I accommodate and get up earlier.
Let's see. And everybody has something they do that's different. When I used to have to be at work at 7 a.m., don't do that anymore. I would be able to get up at 6 and drive half an hour to work.
But then you would like shower the night before, you lay out your clothes, you have your lunch ready. Like that's what I would do.
No. Well, I get up, jump in the shower.
I was about to say, you don't shower, you don't eat, and you just run out in your pajamas.
I would get up, shower, quickest shower in the world, eat my breakfast, and then get in the car. Would I have my hair dried and my hair coiffed? No, it was always soaking wet, even in the middle of winter. That's how I functioned.
You showed up to meetings at
I do all the time because I'm not spending an hour blow drying my hair. It's just a waste of time.
I have to do that.
So thinking about what your executive functioning challenges are, you have to determine what they are and which areas you need to work on.
Yeah, absolutely.
What Elizabeth and I have been talking about really is planning, organization, and figuring out if we can be flexible around certain things. So I want to read a paragraph from the book, Brain Hacks.
Yep.
Maybe you've been rushing through your day-to-day life, feeling overscheduled, underrested, and as if goal setting and long-term planning are just one more thing that you can manage. By harnessing the power of executive functioning, you will improve your efficiency, effectiveness, stress management, putting things like financial planning, fitness goals, and higher education within reach.
That's so true.
Well, thinking about it, if you're flying through your day and you don't feel like you're doing anything, like Elizabeth does described, if she doesn't do certain things, she arrives at a meeting not feeling together to do this meeting.
Drives me crazy.
If you work on your executive functioning skills, you can bring that all together. Now, again, everybody works on this differently.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I rush in the morning to get to certain meetings. Shh. Be careful. What I do is I always make sure I get there 5 minutes ahead of time. Elizabeth talked about meditating. So I will sit in my car for 5 minutes before I enter a meeting to refocus and regroup by doing breathing techniques.
You do that before you come in my house?
No, not in your house. But for big meetings, I used to do that all the time.
I do
and
too.
I still do it when I'm feeling overwhelmed and stressed
100%.
Because of whatever's happened in my morning routine or my daily routine or situations. You have to bring yourself together before you walk into that meeting.
Well, it's breaking that fight or flight response, right? So when you're in a chronic anxiety state, mm-hmm. you are in a chronic state of fight or flight. Mm-hmm. That part of that is because your body is reacting to what is an imagined threat. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, your body responds no matter whether it's imagined or real. And so in response to that, the adrenal glands that sit on your kidneys pump out this hormone called cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
And cortisol's whole function is to get you ready to either beat the crap out of somebody or run like hell.
Yeah.
Neither of which are conducive
to a calm
existence and a calm day. So yeah. I know there's some objection and I've run up against it around mindfulness with the autism community. So we're not talking about that. We're not suggesting any particular tool that you have to use for this. These are tools that work for us. When we actually just had a meeting with our socially ASD board, and one member happened to be having an extremely stressful day. I did check in with her mom through another means just to make sure of what we were handling. And through the Zoom call, we breathed together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The reason breathing is suggested is because cortisol elevates your breathing rate.
Mm-hmm.
So that you are processing oxygen faster, so that you can run faster, so that you can do all these things faster.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take deep breaths, it is a signal to your brain that you are safe. It is a signal to your brain that you don't have to run, you don't have to fight anybody. And it forces the brain almost to calm its ship.
So. Let's just look at that slightly differently too. You're in a highly anxious state. You're completely overwhelmed by something.
Yeah.
I want you to slow down your heart rate.
Oh, you can't.
I want you to slow down your thought processes.
No, can do.
What can you do?
I can breathe.
You can breathe. It's the one anatomical function that you have control over, which actually calms down the rest of the anatomical functions and gives you that ability to focus and do what you have to do.
And there's intentionality around why people say breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the breathing in through your nose actually helps so you're not sucking in a huge amount of air all at once,
which
you can use in your mouth, and blowing it out. Typically you can do a ha, or you control the size of your mouth. You control the level and the rate of exhale.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not airy fairy. It's not like, you know, yogi, whatever. It is a physiological way to calm your shit,
mm-hmm.
get your brain back, and, you know, tell the monkeys to take a day off.
Perfect.
I do that. And I have to remember, it's a habit. You got to build it, but honestly, it works.
Yeah, it's a tool that you have to practice the skills. And that's one thing I wanted to talk about now with executive functioning.
Yes.
If you're having challenges with planning an organization, well, getting all the agendas and planning tools and putting all your electric calendars together is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But if you take on so much of that all at once that you are overwhelmed with all 100%. The tools that you're losing, using, you're not going to be able to be successful at it. So you 100%. Have to start with small steps. And you have to completely work on those small steps repeatedly many times to get the results that you need.
And be kind to yourself through that process.
Yeah. One thing at a time. So if you want to add a morning routine, add a morning routine. If you want to add an evening routine, add an evening routine. Those are things that you can add and you can practice on a daily basis to establish the structure that you need within your executive functioning to be successful.
We just watched a video and her name is escaping me. So we'll try and find the link, but it's a young lady in the UK.
Yes.
Who has autism, and the routine that, or the video that we happened to watch, she was all about the routine. And how it helped her function and stay calmer and get more done, which was amazing. So this is not just us as crazy people telling you to do this or to take a look at it. It's working.
Yeah. It's working at it and doing it consistently. If you're not going to be doing something consistently, it's not going to work. If you think that after 2 days of following a morning routine,
you're going to work,
that you're done, you're not going to get there.
28 days to make a new habit, baby.
There you go.
That's
and these are things that we're changing. We want to change. We want to make sure you're establishing appropriate positive habits that will help you get through the day successfully.
Yep.
That's all these things are.
Well, here's a thought for everybody to consider. Mm-hmm. Is the pain of what you're experiencing by not establishing routines to improve your mental health and improve your day, is that pain better for you, or does it work for you in some way? Mm-hmm. More so than trying to change it. Mm. And that's where you have to kind of step into what you're doing and say, okay, you're like, you're getting something out of continuing to work in a dysfunctional way somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide if the pain point is great enough to do something about it. Yeah. If you're listening, sounds to me like it's likely that you're at a point where you want to do something about it. And we'll give you as many tips over the next three podcasts as we can. So Paulette, did you want to jump into, or do you want me to?
No, go ahead.
Woo-hoo. So if, you know, you're late to the party on the whole executive function skills, and these, I'm like, again, I'm 50, I'm still devising ways and discovering things that do and don't work for me. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a visual planner. So I have whiteboards all over my office because that helps me remember bits and pieces. Paulette's amazingly patient that when we were at Tech Place and we had our big office, I had whiteboards everywhere, but that's how I map out what we're doing. Mm-hmm. When I have to get an idea sorted, talking to somebody really helps me do that. And then I have to kind of work at it in a kinesthetic, like a physical way. And then I can see the problem and I can find a solution. So everybody is always finding ways to make things better. Right now we're teaching Paulette some new technology and it's super fun.
It is great fun. Yes.
Slack is her new friend. So five ways to help adults build their core life skills. And what I love about this is that it gives you the why. So for an example, practice with real life situations. So depending on what your stressful situation is, you can encourage yourself to imagine and prepare for relatable stressful situations. And that builds a bit of muscle memory. If you imagine the situation, like you're going into a social situation or whatever, and you start thinking your way through on how you're going to handle it, then you build that muscle memory in for when you actually go and do it. And the why around that is adults see how the skills are relevant to their lives and learn simple everyday ways to practice them, which is true. Mm-hmm. That helps with focus and flexibility. Spot and stop the triggers. That's a big one for me.
It's a big one for many people because a lot of people don't recognize the triggers that are taking them to the squirrels.
Right. Or to the angry squirrel place.
Oh, yeah. Emotional regulation. Yep.
It's more the angry squirrels that get on my case versus the regular everyday squirrels. So help adults recognize what their triggers are for intense emotions and learn to take preventative actions. Look at that. They recommend taking a deep breath, stopping, not necessarily to think, but just stopping. Mm-hmm. don't focus on anything other than your breath. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'll figure out your next step. And that might sound a little lame, but it's true, because we don't know what situation you are in, mm-hmm. in order to give you an appropriate next step. So this allows adults to become more self-aware and developing a very simple coping strategy that takes you out of the heat of the moment and allows you to sort of process better and pick a better next step.
So just, can I just go on a tangent?
Do whatever you want to do.
I'm going to do a squirrel here. A lot of people say that people on the spectrum say things without thinking, are quite rude, who do things on impulse. And that's part of the executive functioning challenges that they face. So when you think of this one here, it says stop, take a breath before you do something that you're not sure is going to be successful.
Yep.
And that's important for a lot of people, for me, for Elizabeth.
And Elizabeth has very little filter. So
yeah. So, but this is all about the self-control and self-awareness. That's part of the executive functioning. So I just wanted to put that in there. Thank you.
No, so, and we do that with Thomas. Yeah. Not as much now, but probably like between the ages of 13 to 18. It's a hard transition because he would not recognize that our friends were not his friends. Mm-hmm. And he would see how Michael would be speaking, my husband, to one of his friends, and he would assume he had the same privilege. Mm-hmm. Or he would come out with something that was like way off the beam. And I'd be mm-hmm. like, dude, you need to stop, mm-hmm. roll that shit around and see if it should come out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Because yeah. it shouldn't have. And you need to develop whatever works for you. But he'll start to say, well, I don't know if I should say this, but, and I'd be like, right there. That's a trigger that you should not.
Yeah.
Roll it around in your head. See if that shit should roll out.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, if you're questioning whether it should or not, it should not.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there. If you think your mom's going to get mad because you're going to say something,
don't say it.
Don't do it. It's not going to end well for you. So
can I just say that that's not only with mom, if you're employed.
Oh, anywhere. Yeah, exactly.
Don't say that to your boss. Don't say that to your coworkers. Yeah. Think about what you're saying to people. Okay, next.
Yeah. If you want to begin a conversation with, I'm not sure I should say this, but
yeah,
chances are you should find somebody you trust and soundboard that before you let it loose on a group of people who might pummel you. Yeah. Either, you know, physically or verbally. So take a second look at stressors. So like we shared earlier, for me, it's lack of sleep and it's overwhelm when I allow my lists to get out of control and I have too many little things niggling at my brain. I just got to screw up, what do we call it? Screw it to the sticking board or whatever and just get them done. Just clear all those little things that are annoying the crap out of you. Like I just cleaned my basement and did a whole whack of stuff because it sits there and takes up space that you don't need to share with it.
Yeah.
And so again, practicing stressful situations, how you would respond and trying to see things from a new perspective. So that's where a person you trust as a sounding board is. And I do that constantly. Mm-hmm. If I'm dealing with something and I know that my go-to is probably not appropriate, I will call my business coach and say, so I want to tell this person to go do this. Insert rude thing here. Can we work through something more appropriate or am I overreacting?
Viewing things in a different way does diffuse anger, frustration, and fear. Adults learn to avoid responses that are out of proportion to the situation.
I've never done that in my entire life.
Yes, I totally believe you.
I would not if I were you. My children can cite many times where mommy has overreacted just to scoochie.
But that is, again, self-awareness, self-control. And these are things that people do have to master and they have to find tools to use.
And being kind to yourself when it happens, because when you are not in touch with how much stress you're under, mm-hmm. it can be really easy to default into certain behaviors. And that is okay. It does not mean it's forever. If you find yourself doing it more often than not, that's a problem. And that is on you to fix. If you find people are reacting to what you're doing in a negative way, if you find, you know, if you are receiving consistent feedback about a specific behavior, it's not them. No. It's you.
Yeah.
And you need to straighten your stuff up. Okay. So another way for helping to build core life skills this is around planning and flexibility, is trying to pick a motivating goal. And again, I don't want to tell you what that goal could be. It could be whatever you want, but go through the plan in your head of how to get to that goal. So if it's setting up strategies to deal with stress better, okay, what does that look like for you? Does that mean, and I wanted to mention this earlier, we have been enjoying time with Dr. Temple Grandin over the last 2 months. And one thing I really respect about her is that even as a world-renowned, you know, cattle yard designer and abattoir designer, and like she is consulted globally on what she does, not only to do with autism, but her day job, she wants checklists.
Yeah.
And I like, this woman is 72.
72. Yeah.
And still, she's like, checklists are your best friend. She's like, if air pilots can use them, so can I. And I was like, valid. And she's like, astronauts use checklists for everything. Why? Mm-hmm. Because it helps you get it done right. And I was like, that is a really fantastic way of looking at it. So if you are all over the place in the morning, remind mm-hmm. yourself that an air pilot has to, they are by law required to go through a checklist before every takeoff. Mm-hmm. Remind yourself that astronauts have to follow checklists every single day.
And that's just two of the professions that have to do that.
They're kind of big though.
Yeah, it's very big, but there's checklists on almost every profession and everything you go into. There's 100%. Something that you have to do in a certain order or it's not going to be successful.
My husband is a millwright and an electrician. He definitely has to follow checklists or he's going to blow shit up. That's yeah. not.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. You know.
But again, we were talking about setting goals here. If yeah. you set a goal and your goal is, I am going to be employed as a CEO.
I already am employed as a CEO. Done.
Yeah. Well, you are. Okay. But what you have to work on with people who need to understand how to work with their planning and flexibility around getting that job is, what are the steps? Break it down. They can't 100%. Just go and get that job. They have to understand all the steps to get there and all the things that they have to do to get there. So that's breaking things down. And it helps making their steps manageable and easier to attain.
But you also identify within that process where your executive function deficit might be getting in the way and where you can use other people or resources. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a skill gap. Everybody has a skill gap or a learning gap. And identifying those, I used to do this with my students. We did a learning assessment at the beginning of every semester mm-hmm. and I would take them through this thing and they thought it was for me. Mm-hmm. And at the end of one of them, one of my students is like, so Mrs. Plouffe, how does this help you? I'm like, doesn't help me at all. And they said, what do you mean? I said, I already teach you auditorially, visually, kinesthetically. I already give you certain tools. I, however, can only do so much. You need to know where your gaps are mm-hmm. and where you need to fill those in. And, you know, and if you need help in a certain area, then this helps you identify where you need to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And this is, nobody can achieve anything in a vacuum. Everybody needs help. So the focusing on a personally motivating goal helps with planning and flexibility. And it can be as simple as, you know, setting up your reading list for the next 6 months for what books you want to read. If you are feeling crafty, like I started a knitting group because I'm like, I should probably learn how to knit at some point. If COVID keeps going, I might have to learn how to knit my own underwear. I'm going to figure that out. But I need help with that because I can't knit. So yeah. I reached out to friends who I know are avid knitters. We've put up Tuesday nights. It'll be tonight, actually. Mm-hmm. We sit down with a tea over Zoom and we knit together. And then if I run into it, like tonight, it's my first time ever, I have to share. I have to knit a new ball of yarn into my knitting.
Oh my God.
All right. I'm a little stressed. What's that?
Can you tie a knot?
Well, they don't do it that way.
Oh, they do it the other way.
Like they're so fancy. I like knots
myself because then they don't unravel it.
Well, this is what I'm thinking. Okay. I'm more of a knot person, but I'm just saying. But I reached out for help, recognized mm-hmm. that was a skill gap, understand how I learn. I learn kinesthetically. I don't learn very well with a kinesthetic activity. I need to be doing it versus just yeah. looking at it.
And she broke it down into steps.
And I did.
Yep.
And you should see, I will share sometime a picture of what I am knitting. The last one here, which is so important, and Paulette and I have discussed this before, is pick out three successes.
Yeah.
Right. So you're picking out three successes because it builds planning and awareness and recalling positive memories also reduces your stress reaction and allows you to move forward and see more steps. Because if you succeeded before, and I don't care who you are, there's going to be people right now, I've never succeeded in anything. If you got up this morning, put some pants on and walked out the door, ting, that was a success, especially if it's not something you normally do. Yeah. Please put pants on before you go outside. If you, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, apparently you can walk around bare chested in Canada and it's not an issue. I highly recommend you don't do that, but you do
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
If you managed this past week to go and do some shopping where before it stressed you out and the anxiety was too high, and I have had panic attacks while shopping during COVID. I've had two so far. Mm. I'm optimistic there's going to be another one. But I know I can get through it and I know it's temporary. If you've done that, boom, success. Well done you, because it is stressful as shit out there sometimes.
It's interesting when this one here, recall positive memories and build on small successes. One of my clients at one point in time, I said, what is one thing that you felt really good about in the last 24 hours? Mm-hmm. I said, just a tiny little thing, very tiny. And she said, well, she was working as a waitress in a bar.
Yep.
And she goes, I got off work, stepped outside of the bar, bus stop right in front of the bar, and the bus pulled up instantly. So she knew
that's a ta-da moment.
Yeah. She knew that she wouldn't have to stand outside for an hour waiting for a bus to take her home in the freezing winter.
Perfect.
Again, how did that make you feel? Well, for her, she felt so much relief, so much joy that she didn't have to hang around outside and wait for a bus. And I said, take that feeling of joy that you had when that bus showed up, and keep that feeling of joy with you for as long as you can, because that's the feeling you should be feeling when you accomplish all the little things you accomplish through the day.
Yeah. And we, what was the, one of the things I learned a while ago is, giving yourself permission to step into a feeling.
Yes.
So it might be hard. You know, my immediate reaction to what you just said was, my God, that's a lot of work, but
it's not.
If you allow yourself to, you can't live in a joyous state forever. That's no. called delusional psychosis, but being able to recall that moment of joy.
Yeah.
And physically feel it and emotionally step into it is a very rewarding situation.
Very powerful. Yeah.
It is very powerful. So we've gone over what the core life skills are, planning, focus, self-control, awareness, and flexibility. We've talked a bit about what those mean, and how, if you're struggling with that skill gap, what are some ways that you can start working on those skills? And if you've been listening and you've identified that there's an area that you're like, I kind of fall down there. There are resources. We'll definitely work on getting something together for the Spiro website on a blog post or what have you. And we'll put some tips and tricks in there. We are never going to be the ones to tell you, you have to do X.
No,
because that's not fair. And we don't know you. And we have no idea what would work for you, but we will give you options to choose from. And find somebody you trust and go over it. And you know, when you ask somebody for help, 99.9% of the time, they're going to be like, can do.
Yeah. It has to come from you. It has to be self-motivated. You have to want to change something. And we can go right back to the beginning where we started talking about change. Yep. What is it that you want to change? Where do you want to go? What do you want to gain in your life?
And what executive function might be getting in the way of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So for our next podcast, we will be going, I got to find the overview. Where did it go? Y'all, dang it, I'm not organized. So for our next one, we're going to be going into how anxiety impacts executive function and potentially other diagnoses, right? So what that looks like, how you can handle it. The book that Paulette Scott has got a ton of great ideas. And, you know, I guess my message would be, for a very long time, I thought the way my brain worked made me crazy. And it isn't. Not, well, you know, not diagnosed as crazy. Paulette's looking away.
The question.
I'm not making light of mental illness. I'm not at all. But when you have a lot of squirrel moments, it can really start to make you question your ability to do anything. But it's that recognition that it's a problem and that willingness to do something about it.
The awareness.
the awareness, and that grows over time and it takes effort. There mm-hmm. is no magic matrix. What did he do? Like blue pill or red pill or something?
Yeah, no, there's no, yeah.
There's nothing.
There's no quick fix for executive functioning challenges, for emotional regulation, for self-awareness. It's something that you just have to work on
yep.
consistently on a regular basis, not once a month,
yeah.
every single day.
And if that scared the crap out of you, you know what? Twice a week. If you can twice a week right now, yeah. that's better than you were doing the week before.
Yeah. And then build it up to 3 times, 4 times until 100%. You're doing it every single day. One step at a time, build it up.
Totally agree with you. It needs to be an everyday. It is. It's an everyday practice. It's an everyday mm-hmm. situation. For today, if the best thing you do is recognize that you're getting stressed out and you remember to breathe in through your nose to the count of 4 and out through your mouth to the count of 6, if you even do that once, well mm-hmm. done.
Makes you
That's
feel
fantastic. Mm-hmm. And next time, take 2 breaths. Mm-hmm. Next time, take 3 breaths. I mean, take as many as you want the first time. That's up to you. No constraints. But starting with 1.
And building.
What was it? Gandhi? All journeys start with a single step.
That's right.
See? And he's kind of a smart guy.
Yeah. A little bit smart. Yeah.
A little bit smart. He changed the world just a scoochie. One of my favorite Gandhi sayings was, you know, people will say, I'm only one person. How can I make anything happen? And he will say, consider the mosquito when you're in a tent. I'm like, that's fair. Having been a Girl Guide and a Girl Guide leader and whatever, I can assure you that that one mosquito can make a lot of change happen.
Yep, definitely.
So on that note, we will talk to you soon, and we will be going into how executive function relates to anxiety. And what was our other? We had another one. Sorry.
We did have another one. It's more along the lines of
Social situations and relationships.
Yeah. Hijacking social situations and in relationships, because executive functioning does interfere with a lot of different aspects of everybody's life.
Dang it. And I used to, before I got control of my filter and my impulsive nature.
Yeah.
Got to tell you, I got some stuff to share. I don't have an autism diagnosis, but damn, I had a salty mouth diagnosis. That's for sure. So thank you for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to speaking with you soon. You can visit spirocareerscanada.ca to learn more about what we're doing. You can also visit Socially ASD, socially with 2 L's, 2 I's, and an ASD. It's our not-for-profit that we're building in conjunction with the autism community. And that's it.
Perfect.
Good. All right. Very good. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Take
care. Bye. I swear that you are the future.
Thank you for joining us on the Across the Desk podcast with our new series, The Future Looks Good. Please check out spirocareerscanada.ca to learn more about the resources available to people on the autism spectrum for employment success.